Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Foreign-Born Children and Equal Protection Edition. I'm your host, Christopher Goffis. On June 12, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Sessions v. Morales-Santana, formerly known as Lynch v. Morales-Santana. The Immigration and Nationality Act provides for derivative acquisition of U.S. citizenship from birth by a child born abroad when one parent is a U.S. citizen and the other is not. At the relevant time here, the INA required the U.S. citizen parent to have 10 years physical presence in the United States prior to the child's birth, at least 5 of which were after attaining age 14. Although the rule applies in full to unwed U.S. citizen fathers, there is an exception for an unwed U.S. citizen mother, whose citizenship can be transmitted to a child born abroad if she has lived continuously in the United States for just 1 year prior to the child's birth. Morales-Santana, who was born in the Dominican Republic, asserted U.S. citizenship from birth based on the citizenship of his father, but his father had fallen 20 days short of satisfying the requirement of 5 years physical presence after attaining age 14. In 2000, the government sought to remove Morales-Santana as a result of several criminal convictions, classifying him as alien rather than citizen because of his father's failure to satisfy the full physical presence requirement. The immigration judge rejected Morales-Santana's citizenship claim and ordered him removed. The Board of Immigration Appeals denied his subsequent motion to reopen proceedings on the claim that the INA's gender-based rule violated the Fifth Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit reversed, holding the differential treatment of unwed fathers and mothers unconstitutional and acknowledging Morales-Santana's U.S. citizenship. The U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari and by a vote of 8-0, affirmed in part and reversed in part the judgment of the Second Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that, 1, the gender line Congress drew in the INA, creating an exception for an unwed U.S. citizen mother, but not for such a father, to the physical presence requirement, violated the Fifth Amendment's Equal Protection Clause as the Second Circuit had determined. But 2, the remedial course that Congress would most likely have chosen if apprised of this constitutional infirmity would have been not a broader application of the one-year exception, but rather preservation of the five-year general rule. Thus, the court cannot grant the relief Morales-Santana seeks. Going forward, it falls to Congress to select a uniform prescription that neither favors nor disadvantages any person on the basis of gender. But in the interim, the five-year requirement applies prospectively to children of unwed U.S. citizen mothers, just as with such fathers. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in the judgment in part, in which Justice Alito joined. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. And now, to discuss the case, we have Kurt Levy, who is President for the Committee for Justice and the Legal Affairs Fellow at FreedomWorks.
This case was argued, perhaps ironically, the morning after the election. And I say ironically because it deals with immigration. And that was, of course, the most controversial issue during the election. So some of the justices looked a little sad during oral argument, but hopefully they've recovered by now. This case deals with part of the Immigration and Nationality Act that makes it easier for children who are born overseas to an unmarried mother who is a U.S. citizen to acquire citizenship than their counterparts whose unmarried father is the U.S. citizen. I don't want to go into a lot of detail about that, but if the unmarried mother is the citizen, then the only requirement for the child's citizenship is that the mother spent at least 1 year in the U.S. before the child's birth. So basically, they're treated the same as parents who are married, in which both parents are U.S. citizens. And on the other hand, if the unmarried father is the citizen, then the requirement is that he had lived in the United States for at least 10 years before the child's birth, with 5 of those years coming after the age of 14. Now, in the case at hand, basically just missed that requirement because he was in the country for something like 19 years, but I guess it was just before his 19th birthday, so he just missed the 5 years after the age of 14. And that rule treats the plaintiff here the same as if his parents were a married couple with one spouse a citizen and the other an alien. So again, that's not as preferential as you get if the citizen parent had been the mother. Now, Congress did amend this law in 86 to make it a little better for fathers. They reduced the requirement from 10 years to 5 years, but that's still discriminatory. You still get less preferential treatment. And besides, the law that's in effect when you're born is the law that applies. So, you know, you may be wondering how often does this come up. Just give you a ballpark idea. The attorney for Morales Santana, the immigrant, or I should really say the resident, since he was a legal resident, estimated that there'd be about 100,000 people who would qualify for citizenship above and beyond if you use the mother's rule for the fathers. So I should point out that this same issue was before the court, I think it was around 2010. Kagan was recused because of her work as Solicitor General. It ultimately resulted in a 4-4 tie, and so we didn't have a Supreme Court ruling. It came before the court again in a slightly different posture in this case, involving Luis Ramon Morales Santana, who was born in the Dominican Republic in 1962. He only had one of his two unmarried parents was a U.S. citizen. That was his father. And as I say, the father fell just short of the 5 years after the age of 14. Morales, I'll just call him Morales for short, moved to the U.S. and became a lawful resident at the age of 13. And as far as I know, didn't care much about citizenship, but it became a crucial issue when the federal government initiated proceedings to deport him after he had a series of criminal convictions. And at that point, Morales countered that he was a citizen because his father had been one and, you know, men should not be differentially treated. So he lost that claim before the Board of Immigration Appeals, appealed to the Second Circuit, which ruled in his favor, found a constitutional violation, did what's called leveling down. So they took the mother's standard and applied it to fathers and said that he was a citizen. And that was basically what I was asking for there. The federal government asked for and got cert. And, well, you knew it was going to be, at least as far as the constitutional ruling, you knew it was going to be, you know, they were going to find a violation when, you know, as soon as you knew that Ginsburg was the author. I mean, it's clear why she got this opinion. She has not just a history of challenging these gender distinctions before she became a judge, but she was involved in one way or another with almost all the early precedential cases. You know, a lot of the cases that she cites in the opinion are, you know, like I say, her cases. Ultimately, you had, and it was clear during oral argument that, you know, most of the justices agreed there was a constitutional violation, which I guess is interesting in and of itself, given that it was split 4-4 the last time. So 6 of the 8 justices ultimately, you know, joined the, and I say 8 because Gorsuch took no part, 6 of the 8 joined Ginsburg's opinion and said there was a constitutional violation. There was a very short concurrence by Thomas that was joined by Alito. I'll get to that in a moment. The court also agreed with the Second Circuit on the standing issue, and that is that Morales satisfied the requirement for third-party standing here, that is standing to assert his father's right to equal protection due to the close relationship that he has with his father and also his father's inability to assert it since his father has since passed away. Ginsburg's majority opinion was pretty straightforward. You know, she explained that laws that treat men and women differentially are subject to heightened scrutiny, and that is they're constitutional only if they serve an important governmental objective, so a little bit less than compelling government objective, and there's a close fit between the objective and, you know, the method that is chosen by the Congress to achieve it. And, you know, again, that pretty much parallels the strict scrutiny standard, except, again, they use a little bit different words. Instead of narrow tailoring, it's close fit. Instead of compelling interest, it's important governmental objective. You know, this standard should be clear to you, going back at least as far as U.S. v. Virginia, the VMI case that struck down VMI's mail-only admissions policy. A lot of people refer to this as intermediate scrutiny, but the court, for the most part, doesn't like to use that term. It says heightened scrutiny, i.e. not really committing itself to what level, but I think we all know what level it is. Court did add that because here, you know, one of the questions was, are we talking about the intent of Congress 60 or so years ago when enacted this, or what Congress would do today. And so the court emphasized that the government objective must be one that applies to today. The government didn't really do, in my point of view, a great job of putting forth defenses. I guess there just really weren't a lot for something that was blatantly discriminatory. You probably don't have to be a lawyer to know that they're pretty weak. One was that Congress wanted to treat mothers differently because our country wants to ensure that a child born overseas has a strong enough connection to the U.S. Again, the implication there is that somehow a father would not provide a strong connection, and it really doesn't make sense. I mean, if that was even their concern, that the connection to the U.S. is strong enough, then why with a mother is 1 year of ties to the U.S. enough? The second reason they gave seemed even weaker. They just said that there's a desire to have children born outside the U.S., or they're concerned that children born outside the U.S. to unmarried parents would be stateless, would wind up with, you know, no citizenship anywhere at all. Again, it's very hard to see why that would apply more to mothers, such that we have to make sure that we give them American citizenship, than to fathers. And, you know, there was no congressional hearings or reports to even indicate that statelessness had anything to do with why Congress enacted this. So basically, both fell very flat. Ginsburg basically concluded that this differential treatment was, I think her words were, stunningly anachronistic. And, you know, I guess I have to agree. It just doesn't seem like, other than, you know, a tradition born in very different gender roles 60 or more years ago, just, you know, hasn't been changed. You know, the government now tries to come up with modern sounding, you know, rationales. But again, this dates back to a time when, you know, there really was the notion that an unwed mother, you know, should be and was the sole guardian of the child, and that fathers didn't care much about the kids and didn't have much contact with them. So again, this is consistent with a long line of cases going back almost 50 years, going back really to Reed v. Reed in 71, which struck down a probate code preference for a father over a mother as the administrator of a deceased child's estate. Really, ever since then, the court has, you know, used terminology like Ginsburg used here for overbroad generalizations about the different preferences or abilities of men and women. And the court did point out that in this case, you know, those generalizations can actually be harmful in two ways. One, they perpetuate the stereotype that requires women to assume the role of primary family caregiver, which they may not want to assume. And then it also works against men who are trying hard to be good fathers. So again, I thought the most interesting thing here was just that all the cases that Ginsburg needed to rely on were ones that she had been involved in, several that she had argued. So again, the majority opinion with 6 votes was pretty straightforward. The concurrence was that Thomas wrote and Alito joined was short. They just said that they agreed that there really was no basis for, and here I'm going to sort of, I guess, ruin the surprise and tell you that the court did not think that it could level down, did not think it could provide the plaintiff with the one-year standard that was applied to the unwed citizen mother. Thomas said that he agreed with that and that therefore the court couldn't give Morales the relief he sought, and that therefore it didn't need to decide whether the differential requirements were constitutional. It didn't even think it needed to decide the standing question. So that's why it was a very short opinion. Now, it's interesting, the concurrence sort of treats it as that they were deciding one question, and that once you say he can't get the relief, you know, it's over. And yet the court referred to itself at the very end. Ginsburg opinion says that they're reversing in part and affirming in part, you know, affirming the unconstitutionality, but reversing with regard to the remedy. So that almost sounds like she views it as two questions. I mean, ultimately, that has no practical significance, but I did kind of find that a little bit interesting. So anyway, in terms of remedy, the two most obvious things to do were level up or level down. The court chose to level up, ultimately to apply the harsher standard to both mothers and fathers, and that was unusual. The court did acknowledge that usually it levels down, you know, if only because that seems fairer to most people. So I think the fact that they, and again, I'll get into it in a second, why they chose to level up, but I think the fact that they did could have some precedential value for doing that in the future. Now, this question about remedy, all was pretty clear that was going to be the big question at oral argument. Like I say, most of the justices seemed to agree that there was a constitutional violation. There was less agreement on the remedy. You know, I mean, there was agreement at oral argument that the court should try to determine what Congress would have wanted to do if it had known that it couldn't have two different standards. The problem was the justices couldn't really agree on which Congress we were talking about, the Congress back in the first half of the 19th century or the current Congress. Roberts thought it was the old Congress. He said, you're not really talking about Congress's intent in the statute if you look at the current Congress. Ginsburg, on the other hand, said, you know, how can you look to that old Congress when that Congress took a completely, you know, non-equal approach to the genders? So ultimately, they never really, you know, answered that question. Again, somewhat unusual what they did. They did acknowledge that to the extent that there's a precedent, it's to level down. The problem here, I think everyone agrees, is that if you extend the more lenient requirement, the 1 year, to everyone, then you wind up giving unmarried parents a better deal than the case where you have married parents and only one is a citizen. And that seems neither fair nor what Congress intended. Now, I do remember an oral argument, Ginsburg said that might not be a problem because this case is about gender discrimination. It's not about, you know, marital status. So it, in some sense, it doesn't matter if you're giving the unwed couple better treatment than the wed couple where one is an alien. But again, I think that's an overly narrow way to look at it, and I guess she eventually became convinced of it because it's really about, you know, is leveling down something that Congress would do, and no, it wouldn't if it resulted in something that seems so unfair to people. So the court did say that it was doing the leveling up on an interim basis, that is, until Congress can step in and come up with some uniform handling of the citizen mother and the citizen father. But of course, that could be never, especially given Congress's ability to agree on the immigration law. I remember at oral argument, Kagan said something which sounded like it had a little more teeth in it in terms of pushing Congress to act. She noted another case, I can't remember which it was, where the justices had, you know, issued their ruling but stayed the judgment to give Congress a chance to do it a different way and put a little pressure on Congress. Not sure why they didn't do it that way here, except that I also remember that Morales's attorney didn't like that idea either. He felt like you had to address the constitutional violation. Nonetheless, it didn't get addressed for Morales. I mean, maybe it will be in the near future. So it really was a hollow victory for Morales. This case probably doesn't break new ground on the differential treatment based on gender, so it probably doesn't add much to the law. It is consistent with a long line of cases, so, you know, it just reinforces the obvious. Again, it might have some precedential value for remedies in that what they did was unusual. Again, I'm not quite sure what the precedent would be. I suppose you could state it as it's fine to level up when leveling down would be something that Congress just wouldn't have done.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.